Hey folks, this is Try with Riker.
Hey, how we doing?
Riker, man, how's your day going so far?
Day is going great. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. You know, it's been quite the dramatic 24 hours in not only the Path of Exile community, but I'd say the greater ARPG community. Obviously, we had a lead designer leaving from the Diablo team, and a lot of people reacted to that. And then later that same day, Grinding Gear Games dropped the bomb. Path of Exile 1 is essentially indefinitely delayed. So, Riker, I think we should start out with that. A little bit of a preview of the Saturday morning news video.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on it, dude?
Well, the PoE part, I guess.
Yeah, the PoE part.
Yeah. So, I mean, first off, I could understand why people are feeling upset, disappointed. We love our hobbies, and there are some hobbies that people get really passionate about, and PoE is a kind of game that really garners a kind of very passionate audience, as opposed to more casual games where people are kind of like, whatever. You have the perfect recipe for people that are they love the game very much, and they're going to feel strongly about it, and so they're going to feel strongly when they get some pretty devastating news. So I totally get, you know, why there's strong emotions there. To me, I'm not terribly surprised that this is what happened, that they had to pull people from PoE1. I was surprised when they first promised that they were going to run both games and that PoE1 was not going to suffer for PoE2, because that's just what you see all the time in the industry, right? Yeah. As projects are, you know, coming to fruition, any company that's running multiple games, that is cooking multiple games, they pull talent, right? You know, at Blizzard, mm-hmm. we saw StarCraft project canceled so that they can pull talent to get Overwatch 2, Diablo 4 out the door. This is just what happens.
Yeah, it's something that a lot of people were hoping GGG was obviously aspiring to do.
Yeah.
And as we've seen, you know, with all the Azaro memes and quotes, you know, and an aspirant can afford to be a promising, an emperor must keep those promises. You know, a lot of people were thinking GGG were the emperors in the scenario, because even though Path of Exile 1 has had delays in the past few years, they still put out banger content updates while they're working on PoE2. And then this first real big test comes around the corner, and they fail. They fail to deliver, right? There's no way of going around it. You know, big GGG shill right here. Love the game. But it is a failure at the end of the day. And it really sucks. And I understand the disappointment, as you do. And I'm curious, what do you think may have led to this? Just speculation, of course. But we know we get a lot of, you know, leaks or insider info from other games long after the failure occurs. Right now, even though we don't have a ton of information, you know, what do you think the real source of this is? Because obviously Jonathan, he took the full blame. Do you think there's anything else at play here? Or what are your thoughts?
I think they, when they promised that they'd be running both games, I think they were sincere. I think they thought they can do it. I think GGG is excellent at running a live service game. I mean, they established that 13-week formula. They perfected it. And maybe it was a bit of overconfidence in thinking that they could manage both games at once. I fully believe their sincerity, but I think they just hit the same struggles that every other company hits when they're shipping multiple products. And they had a great plan, right? They had a great plan of having the two teams. And in theory, if in a perfect world, that plan would have worked. But unfortunately, it's not a perfect world. And, you know, any plan does not survive first contact with the enemy, and the enemy is time. And we don't have indefinite time. You can't keep delaying a game. At some point, you got to ship. And if you want to make sure that game is as good as possible, are you going to be like, I left some resources on the table. I didn't pull all my best PoE1 talent to help ship this product on time. It was going to happen.
Yeah. It's, I think a lot of people have been looking at this line, like, you know, perfect is the enemy of good, right? And I think GGG, they like things to be as perfect as possible. And when Path of Exile 2 went into early access, obviously there were a lot of problems that, honestly, I just don't think they either didn't see in their testing, or they didn't think were massive issues. But when a ton of players came against the walls, oh my goodness, they were so apparent. You know, things as simple as runes not being overwritable. Mm. Oh my gosh. Like, that was one thing. When I was talking to Jonathan, I told him, like, you should be able to overwrite these. And he's like, it'll be fine. Bro, no, man. It's not fine. That was a simple thing that massively affected so many different players. So, you know, early access, I've really enjoyed it so far. And I know in your latest video, you talked about you're mostly like a casual player. And we'll get into the definition of casuals soon. But I'm curious, what are your thoughts on early access of PoE2 so far as well?
Yeah, I mean, first off, I think it's been a tremendous success for them. But yeah. I've really been enjoying my time with the game. I do feel like we're kind of, it's two different games in one. I feel you have the campaign game, which is like spectacular. And then you have the end game that it feels different. It feels like it turns into something else. And, you know, that one, you know, maybe needs a bit more tuning and polish than the first one, which is really, really, really solid. And I mean, my understanding is that the whole end game system is something they kind of just cooked together in the last few months. Is that right?
Yeah, last 6-7 months. I think the exact date was the reveal of the Spiritborn for Diablo 4 is when they turned everything toward end game. They were like, oh, we should probably work on this thing that people are expecting to be developed, right? And they stopped worked on the campaign. Yeah. So you enjoyed the campaign then thus far?
Absolutely, yeah. It's funny, when I finished the campaign, so I thoroughly enjoyed it, but I'm like, you know, it took however many hours, and I'm like, I don't want to have to do that again anytime soon. I am eager to jump into the end game, and I got into the end game, I was enjoying it, and then I got to a point where I'm like, I kind of want to do the campaign again. I really enjoyed that. So I didn't expect that. I didn't expect to miss it so soon.
Yeah, I definitely get that feeling, especially because, what did you play your first run through? I'm curious.
So I've only had the one character because I've still been enjoying it, and it's Minion Witch. Because in 2019, I tried PoE2. In 2022, at Gamescom, I tried PoE2. So I've tried many of the classes, including the Druid, including the Huntress. And so I had an idea. I'm like, I'm not going melee. There is no way. I am not skilled enough to handle melee. I remember the long animations with the hammer, and I'm like, I'm going to try a minion build also because Diablo 2, man, my first experience was a necromancer, a minion necromancer, summoner necromancer. And I've just always been trying to recapture those feels.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, maybe this will be the one. And I really enjoyed playing a summoner.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I've heard good things, especially with the latest patch where they kind of reworked how minions were despawning and then not responding around. You're like, that sounded brutal, dude. And I know endgame with the corridors. Ooh, I would be frustrated if I was playing minions. So, but I ask that because if you ever play through another section of the campaign, you know, in the near term, man, it feels different character to character. And it's not even character to character. It's just archetype to archetype. You know, we're saying monks and warriors, but it's really, okay, if you use maces, wow, that plays differently from quarterstaffs. And same with minions. I was shocked at how just different the playthroughs felt on each class. And full disclosure, bro, I could not play a minion character past level 5. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. But I'm with you. In D2, that was my first character too, minion character. I didn't go necro. Druid was my jam.
Okay.
Yeah. Didn't work out well.
It wasn't the best build.
No. And I was very young too. So I was just playing smashing buttons and clicking right, like, oh, this is cool. That's cool. Kind of what I do with PoE2 right now, maybe a little bit more sophisticated. But I really pushed myself, tried to beat it, and it didn't work out when I was, you know, 7-8 years old. When I revisited a few years later, I was able to. How old were you when you first played Diablo 2?
I want to say 12, and it was the original Diablo 2. We didn't have Druid yet, but I what appealed to me about the Necro was, and I'd played RPGs before, and it's always like you play like the goody two-shoes hero, and I'm like, oh, this is like a dark-looking dude. He looks kind of evil. Like, this is different. And I just love that just dark spin on the genre. And like right away you go out there and you're fighting like zombies and undead. Whereas other games, it's like, go into the cellar and kill 6 rats for me, please, Mr. Hero. It's like, what?
Yeah, I remember that clearly in games like Neverwinter Nights and Baldur's Gate. right? Yeah, I mean, exactly. Baldur's Gate, that's the classic. Yeah, right? You're in Candlekeep, and the first thing you do is you go into a freaking cellar, and you kill the rats, right?
Bingo.
So, yeah, that dichotomy must have been crazy back then when those were the options available. Did you ever play, like, Neverwinter Nights? I'm curious.
I did, yeah.
Oh, awesome. Did you play the Persistent Worlds or just stick to the campaign?
Oh, gosh, it's been so long. I remember noodling around in, like, the map editor thing. And like
the Aurora tool set?
Yes. Yeah. That was great.
Yeah. It's a man. Let's move it up. Dungeons and Dragons, right?
Yeah.
So I got to do it, you guys, because it's the perfect time. That experience in Neverwinter Nights with the Aurora tool set editor is the peak D&D video game form thing ever. Like, it just gave all the power in the hands of players via scripts and all the models and tile sets. So I'm curious, dude, I know from some video, I can't remember which video it is, you were just talking about how, you know, you originally kind of started YouTube for D&D, like Dungeons and Dragons, or you had series related to that. How long have you been playing? I'm curious.
Like 25 years.
Really?
It's my biggest hobby, yeah.
Really? Okay, are you a DM or player mostly?
DM. DMing is really what I enjoy the most. I've been a player a couple of times, but I just... it's my creative outlet. So like I get to build worlds. I get to build a lot of characters and plot lines and it just, it's my ultimate creative outlet. And yeah, I just love it.
So you're playing it now, I presume, if your biggest hobby.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So DMing your own world or, in a pre-established setting?
So we have our own setting. It's been running for, I don't know, like 15 years through multiple campaigns to the point that like, characters from like the first campaign, they've become like the emperors and like whatever, like powerful figures. And so we go through generations of players as well, where some players get to see their old characters as NPCs now, or new players are meeting old characters from, you know, past campaigns. So
that's awesome. That's the dream, dude, especially if you have a close-knit group of friends or people that cycle in and out and you get to see those stories evolve over the course of a decade. I also, you know, big DM here, I have thousands of pages of my own homebrew world written.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, dude, it's so much fun sitting down, playing in person, or even we did it online for a little bit there. It used to be one of my favorite things, but man, people, I think, underestimate the amount of like effort it takes, especially as a DM.
Absolutely. I think if they don't do it, they just can never know.
Really. But I feel like being a dungeon master really prepped me almost for streaming or like being on YouTube. Cause I feel like every single one of those sessions, just a whole bunch of like videos, cause like you're narrating like either combat or you're being NPCs, you're exhibiting someone. Like, do you feel that way too? Do you feel like you can help hone your craft every time you sit down at the table to roll some dice?
You know, I never thought of it that way, but that's it makes sense. It makes sense.
Yeah. Cause you're constantly thinking on your feet.
I had started, as you mentioned, my original like YouTube content was D&D. It was posting my Dungeons and Dragons sessions just to share with the world, and then eventually D&D tips. And I would listen back to my recordings, and I would make like little post-it notes of stop saying you know, speak more clearly, stop mumbling, stop slurring your words. And I think that actually better, prep me for being able to make YouTube videos.
Mm-hmm. Huge. The thing, I had a sticky note on my Dungeon Master screen saying, don't say just shut up. And it helps with narration, right? Instead of, you know, if you do just a line talking about them creeping into some decrepit sewer, and then as you're thinking of the next line, you know, talking about the giant rat that lies within, if you say it instantly takes them all out of the moment. But if you pause and give them a moment to just conjure it in their mind, it adds to the atmosphere and everything, dude. So yeah, it's a hobby I really want to get back to. Kids and I am just so zonked now, man.
I could imagine.
Oh God, it's rough. One day I'll get back.
Awesome.
I'm curious, is there a reason that you stopped sharing D&D stuff and swapped over to Diablo style content and ARPG video game content?
Yeah. So, I mean, I started YouTube just as a way to share, you know, my hobbies with the world, with other people, like-minded people. You know, there was no monetization on YouTube back in the day. Yeah. And D3 came out. I got really into D3. As Reaper of Souls was coming out, like, my YouTube channel was a purely D&D YouTube channel. I made D&D tips, posted sessions, and but I was super into D3, and like, I was doing a lot of research, and I'm like, man, I'm doing all this research. I like to share with the world. Let me like share this wealth of information on like guides and stuff. And so I started making guide content for D3, and that just exploded like 10, 20, 50 times bigger than my D&D content. So there was a pretty rapid shift from D&D focus into Diablo focus.
Do you think it was the content itself or the voice?
That made it so popular?
Yeah, yeah, because I'm every single video of yours, I see, oh, you know what? Turning this on Saturday morning, listening to the smooth voice, just chilling. It's good vibes. Or do you think, like, did you put a lot of work into those tip videos? Did you make them, like, concise, or were they just super in-depth? I have not watched the D3 content. I've watched the D4 content, but I was not around in the D3 era.
Sure. I mean, so YouTube has evolved so much over the years. I mean, again, I started before, like, ads were even running on YouTube. Crazy. And I think when I was making the guides, the reason that my channel was able to grow was at the time, like, there just was a paucity of this kind of content. There just weren't many guides. And the guides that there were was like just poor quality with regards to, like, you know, terrible mic, no webcam, like terrible recording quality. Like, people didn't know how to edit. People didn't know how to do YouTube back then. Right. And so I was able to leverage a certain set of skills. And I think that's what allowed me. Also, I had knowledge of SEO, search engine optimization, which kind of no one really knew back then. And it's no longer the meta for YouTube, but just because of things keep changing so fast. But it was being able to apply specialized knowledge and skills to produce a product that just wasn't found really elsewhere. And it took a few years before, you know, everyone started to get a webcam, and everyone, like nowadays, you know, you can buy a streamer kit for like $20, $30, $40 and you have everything. You got the ring light, you got the camera, you got the mic. It's really easy now to get into things, but it wasn't that wasn't the case back then.
Where did you, if you don't mind me asking, where did you get those skills? Were you in media before, or this was just knowledge you had, you know, picked up from different creators or someone else?
I guess you're right that it was D&D.
I knew it,
because D&D prepped me for it. I mean, I guess editing the D&D videos for a couple of years gave me the skill. Yeah, I don't have any formal education in video editing or like voice work or anything other than throughout my life, you know, doing voices as of NPCs. I like voice acting. It's fun. And then the SEO stuff was from being working in as an editor for a website.
Oh, okay. There you go. Okay, before we get back to ARPGs, you're setting me up for it, man. You love doing voices. Okay, you don't have to do the voice right now, but do you have a certain favorite NPC voice you want to share? Maybe just describing it, you know?
Well, oh, okay. So, I mean, if I have a favorite NPC, if there's one voice to do, it wouldn't be from my homebrew. It would be, hello, stay a while and listen.
That was pretty good. That was excellent. Okay. Is there a Deckard Cain in your homebrew world of some sort?
I'm sure I have at some point done a Deckard Cain voice, or at least something similar enough. The thing is, I can't bust it out. Obviously, I know everyone's going to recognize it and they're not going to take the dude seriously. So I use it very judiciously.
You use it for the joke character, you know? You're just like, okay, I want them to not take this old dude so seriously. I've done it for a tabaxi merchant before. Let's do it. Totally unserious character, but I went really all in on it and even did like the, you know, standing like this and everything. I really get into the body language when I'm DMing too.
It helps a lot. Right?
It does. 100%. Okay. D&D tangent over, time stamped in the video. Back to Diablo. Now, you know, I obviously have played a lot more Path of Exile than Diablo 3, Diablo 4. I did give Diablo 4 a chance at the a go, like when it came out. I really enjoyed the campaign. Like I really enjoyed it. It gripped me. I think I played through it in 2 evenings, which I blasted it, I think, because it's pretty long. It's pretty lengthy, especially as someone who doesn't have a lot of experience. Once I hit the end game, I kind of bounced, but I've returned season after season. And the next season that really captured me was Vessel of Hatred and season 6. Season 7, I haven't tried. I've watched your review of the season, your brutally honest review. And you talked about it finally really cementing its identity in the ARPG space, you know, as a game for casual players, right? More casual players. And you grappled a little bit about the definition of casual, which I agree can be like co-opted or kind of amorphous depending on who you ask. So first, what is your definition of like a casual player? Just in your eyes. I'm curious.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a great point because people have different definitions and, oh, yeah. And it, even it has for a lot of people, it has that sort of ick that like, oh, it's a pejorative. Right. It's you're talking down to people when you're calling them casual. Like I identify in large part, like I'm pretty casual relative to other content creators, at least. But at the end of the day, you know, words are just sounds that we make that we all agree, you know, mean a certain thing. So if there's a better term, I'm not married to any one term. But my personal definition, I think I see it as we got two axes. And on the x-axis, on one side, you have the x-axis is basically how much time you devote to your hobby. And it could be a lot of time or it could be very little time. And so the little time is kind of more on the casual side. And the lot of time is on the more, whatever, the opposite of casual, you know, blaster side is. Mm-hmm. And then the y-axis is how much of a challenge you're looking for in your recreation with, mm-hmm. you know, very little challenge being more casual and very much challenge, a lot of challenge being more, you know, hardcore. And so I think in that bottom right quadrant where you have little time and little challenge, that's mm-hmm. where D4 thrives. Like that mm-hmm. kind of player that's just looking for something to relax to, and maybe they don't have a ton of time to put, like that's where D4 thrives. Whereas PoE, you know, especially PoE2, really thrives in that top left quadrant mm-hmm. of people that, well, I'd say the campaign actually just on the left half period. Because even people that don't mm-hmm. have a lot of time, as long as they're open to a challenging experience, that whole left, the top half, my bad. The people looking for a challenge, regardless of how much time that they have, it serves them really well. But then when we get mm-hmm. to end game, it goes just to the quadrant where a lot of time and challenge. Although I guess I'm not at that level, but I think even the challenge starts to fall off at the highest tiers of play. Is that right?
Yeah, I definitely say so. When I think the whole progression is a little iffy right now with Path of Exile 2, especially in the end game, as we touched on, you know, at the front, it's like a flip switches once you hit that end game. Right now, you know, sometimes because everything is RNG based, finding the pinnacle boss, the Arbiter, people can get to a power level at which they're so strong they insta-kill the pinnacle boss the first time they find it. And that's horrible. Wow. I hate it. It happened to me right here. My friend, he's level 93. He's played way more than me, but he hasn't been able to find the citadels. He just has terrible luck. So I gave him two frags. I gave him one fragment. And I was like, yeah, go do the Arbiter. You know, let's watch. Oh, I'm so excited. I just fought him. You know, it was like a 4-minute fight. It was crazy going back and forth. I succeeded on my last attempt. He goes in and he's a frost mage, necro, but minion mancer. Arbiter did not even get an ability off. And I was like, this isn't good. This just isn't good. The system needs to change entirely. The progression is totally out of whack, you know? So.
And I mean, that's not the vision that the devs have for the game. I imagine they don't want endgame to devolve into that is my impression, at least, right?
Yeah, I'd imagine no dev really wants that, especially for their top tier content. Even if Diablo is, you know, little time investment and ease of challenge, I'd say like your highest Uber tier fight, it should be kind of a struggle, at least the first time you fight it. Yeah.
Reasonable.
Yeah. I'd say that's reasonable because even if you can have like 95% of the game being that lack of challenge, just chilling, killing lots of monsters, downing bosses really fast, that last 5%, having that pushback against you, I feel like makes that other 95% being very chill okay, you know, for a large segment of players. Like, you want that pinnacle, that aspirational content that is actually conquerable, right? Mm. aspirational in the term that sometimes GGG uses, I think is a little wrong. Like, they think that, okay, yeah, literally the best of the best should only be able to do this, right? And I don't think that's what like Blizzard goes for necessarily. They try to make everything accessible, but I still think it should have that aura of challenge about it, you know?
Absolutely fair. Yeah.
Yeah. So I know you were talking in your video that, you know, oh, I enjoy PoE2 at some times. I enjoy D4 at other times. Which one do you think you would enjoy, at least you enjoy more right now in their current states? I'm curious, because obviously D4 is pretty well developed at this point. It's established its identity. In Path of Exile 2, it is missing a lot of content, and there's a lot of stuff wrong with it. So somebody asked me this question about, I think it's last, no, it was like, if you could play Path of Exile right now forever, or Path of Exile 2 forever, what would you choose? And I chose Path of Exile 1. If you could only play one more forever, which would it be, D4 or would it be Path of Exile 2?
Assuming both games are frozen in their frozen current in time. State right now, PoE 2.
Yeah. Okay. What really, wow, that's a surprising answer. What really cements that enjoyment for you? I'm curious. Is it the campaign? Well,
so to clarify, it's not that I don't enjoy D4. It's just
not at all.
I think each of these games has a finite number of hours of enjoyment that you can get out of them before you got to wait for the next seasonal launch or league launch. And I think, especially with the current speed of progression in D4, it's so fast that I can't see myself sustained for more than, like, I'm having I'm really enjoying season 7, but am I going to enjoy it for a full month? I don't know. I'm definitely not going to enjoy it for more than a month. Like, season 6 was amazing, but after a month, I'm like, okay, I can't wait for PoE 2 now. Whereas PoE, because everything is slower, there's kind of more content. I could savor it for a longer time.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And you're playing SSF too, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, dude, it feels like the game is almost designed for SSF, honestly.
Interesting. Okay.
I think the, like,
well, the difficulty, I would agree. I would agree. The loot drops don't feel designed for SSF.
No, dude, sorry. I'll correct myself. The difficulty, it feels so good. You know, the speed at which you're progressing through the campaign and into maps. It feels like it's a steady progression, and you're not meant to like leap from, you know, T1 maps to T15. You can do that in trade very easily, and it feels bad just buying your way through the progression. In SSF, which I mostly did, I did like SSF Lite. I traded like 2 items before I did Arbiter. Felt really good. Felt really good. So I'm glad you're getting that SSF experience, because sometimes trade, I don't know, it kind of corrodes your mind, and almost you have that feeling in the back of your head saying, oh, you should just trade for this item. You just go for it. Just buy the item. You don't need to earn it yourself. Just go for it. You know, is that something that you ever felt in like Path of Exile 1? Because you didn't play much Path of Exile 1, if I'm not mistaken, did you?
I mean, not as much as Diablo games. I was really into PoE 1. Gosh, when was it? It was before Exile Con, the first Exile Con. I played PoE 1 maybe for like a year or something. Like I just reached a point where, you know, I was like, my job was playing D3, and I just couldn't make the time for both games anymore. And like PoE was like taking over my life, and I was loving it. And I did get into the whole trade game. I was like Mercury Trade and whatever, like app downloaded all the different various plugins to get it all to work, the alerts and everything. And it was just taking over my life. And I'm like, I my job is suffering. I can't keep taking time away from D3 for this. And PoE1 is a game that I just, for me to really enjoy it, I gotta be all in, and just playing it a little bit here and there. I couldn't get that the amount of investment that would make me enjoy it. So I was really looking forward to PoE2 and being that fresh start where I can get in from the ground up and I can learn all the systems and not just be like, oh, I missed a year and now there's a million things that I don't understand anymore.
Yeah. I totally can relate to that. All of my friends and family, I tried desperately for years, dude, to get them into PoE 1. Wouldn't do it. They all popped into PoE 2 with ease. They are loving it so much. They see it as that fresh start, okay? And they're absorbing all the systems and enjoying the gameplay. And I almost was going to get them to play PoE 1 because I was like, oh, there's going to be a new league in like February or March, you guys. You know, it's going to be so cool. And they're like, okay, you know, maybe. I'm really enjoying PoE 2. Maybe I'll give it a go. And now they've learned, you know, about the delay, and they're like, maybe I'll just stick to PoE 2, you know, I'll just chill there, right? I don't need to learn 2 games. So, yeah, but that makes sense. It really is it just caters to that crowd. As you said at the top of the chat, people who just are hardcore and really like to dedicate themselves to a single game forever or a really small stretch of time and just grind the hell out of it. Now, with D3, what was the appeal of D3 to you that made you stick with it from, you know, I assume, did you play when it came out, 2012? Oh, yeah. 2012 yeah, to, 2022, essentially. What was the big appeal there?
That's a good question. I mean, so I played it every day up until Reaper of Souls. Reaper of Souls, I still playing it every day. For me, like the one of the best states of balance of D3 was early life of Reaper of Souls. I think it was like maybe 3 to 6 months in was when like the progression and the drops were like perfect for me. Yeah. And then after that, things just kind of got easier and faster, and I would burn out faster and faster.
Right.
But I mean, it's just, it's distilled fun is what it is, right? Like it's arcadey fun. It's, we're talking about finite hours per season, like in later years, because everything became so much faster. And this is my concern now with D4 that we're already there. You just burn through those hours really fast. And so like in D3, by the end, like I could get 2 weeks max and then I'm done. And it's like, what do I do for the next 2.5 months now?
Right.
But like, I always enjoyed the experience at the start of the season. My only 100% regret was just that that's all there was. And it was just, it happened too fast. And I would like to have more stuff. Like one thing that PoE does really well and has done really well is it's meaningful end game systems to engage with that. Once you're kind of powered up, you could still keep going and having context to what you're doing and feeling like you're accomplishing things as opposed to just like, oh, here's another Paragon level kind of thing.
Why do you think that is, that they ramp up, that Blizzard in particular ramps up that speed of progression? Now it's in two Diablo games. Like obviously it happened over an elongated period in Diablo 3, it sounds like, but in Diablo 4, June of 2023, it comes out and we're in 2025. And like I saw, you know, you're getting to level 60. That's not, you know, maxed out completely, but it's level 1 to 60. It's the main progression for a lot of players in 3 hours. And we're getting chests that drop loot for 32 seconds or something. What was that crazy clip that I saw? It's like, I'm just so curious because I feel like many players understand that sentiment that you're getting at. Like they want to play for a longer period of time, but they just accomplish everything so quickly.
Well, so here's the thing.
Yeah.
A lot of players like us want that, but I think we're actually the minority. And
yeah.
So I released a video about 10 months ago, where it was framed around like what happened to Last Epoch, because Last Epoch was made a big splash and then kind of disappeared.
I remember that one.
Rapidly, faster than I expected. And I use that as a topic to broach, like, do ARPGs have a problem that we just like burn out on these games really fast? Why can't they sustain us for like a long period of time, like, you know, in the past? And I had to eat crow or like understand that my opinion's in the minority. Everyone like was like, this is a terrible take. Like we don't want to play a game forever. We want to play it for like 2 weeks and be done and move on and play other games. Whereas I'm the kind of person that I want to play my one game for like a year. Like I want to be a one game Andy. And just do that all the time. But that's the minority, apparently. People like being able to get everything done in like their 2 weeks. They feel good about that. They don't feel like the game is lacking. And then they can go and play their other games, their other, you know, 10 games they're going to cycle through over the next 3 months and then come back for another 2 weeks of fun. And, you know, it does a good job appealing to that crowd.
You think it's the fault of the entire modern live service system wherein we've got the battle pass that we complete and we get the check marks off the list and then we go to the next game with the battle pass and it feels good to complete the battle and you just continue that cycle? You think that's what's going on? Because I feel you, dude. I am a mono gamer. I like playing a game, sticking to that game, and just learning it really well and thriving in the knowledge that I've gained and that I continue to learn play session after play session. I think it's like why I like Path of Exile so much. It's because I kept learning, even though it was the only game I was really playing. Beforehand, it was Dungeons and Dragons Online. I don't know if you ever played that, but
a little bit.
Peak until it went pay to win. But do you think that might be the source of what's going on here with the majority of players? Because I think you're right. Mono gamers are the minority. I think you're totally right.
I think it can play into things. I think it's just largely across generations, across culture, our attention spans have gone a lot shorter. It's a mixture of things. One, attention spans have gone shorter. And second is there's just so much more competition for our attention these days. I mean, back in the D2 days, how many games did you own? Maybe a handful? Whereas nowadays we have a library of hundreds of Steam games we've never played and never will, but we buy them on special because damn it, we're going to definitely play them one day for sure. Right. And we have now Netflix and Amazon Prime and Twitch and YouTube. And there's like a million easily accessible means of entertainment at our fingertips that we just didn't have in the past. And so we had our one game and that was it. And now it's like, social media as well, feeding us 15 seconds of video at a time. Our attention spans, I think, just can't keep on one thing for very long, and we don't want to, and we don't have to.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I also wanted to ask you a little bit about this aspect of D4 that I think pushed me off a little bit as someone who is casual in terms of play time for a lot of these games. Most of the time I can have those periods where I blast, at a league launch or something, but most of the time, I really like Path of Exile because I can play it on my schedule, whereas something like D4, at least from the outset, they have all these seasonal events, and they have the world bosses, and they have the, world map where you have to participate with all these different players to grind out this stuff. It feels almost MMO-ish, in a sense. I had played a lot of Guild Wars 2 in the past before I had kids, and that had a lot of the same elements, even though it was a little bit more casual friendly, right? I'm really curious about your thoughts on these MMO elements, because I feel like as the game has progressed, except for the addition of the Dark Citadel, they've almost recessed into people's minds, and they're not really talking a lot about these MMO-ish elements. Have they kind of disappeared from the community? Like, are people just accepting it? Do people not really interact with it anymore? What are your thoughts on those in ARPGs in specific? Because a lot of people say, oh, D4 didn't try to reinvent the wheel. They totally did. They went hard with a freaking open world and an MMO. That was crazy. Absolutely crazy. And I think it was an L for me, but I think maybe a lot of people maybe enjoy it and just are like, yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I think the D4 of release and the D4 of today are almost like two different games, in the same way that like PoE 2 campaign and PoE 2 endgame are two different games. There's been a reversal of so many decisions or directions. One of them being, I feel like the MMO element has been walked back a lot. And, part of it is like world bosses now, the timer is just, they pop up much more often. So it's more forgiving of, you don't have to log in for that time of day. It's kind of like, on an average play session, you may, run into the world boss. They're also not as important to do, I think, as a lot of like the timed events, like the Legion events. No one does those anymore. It's just, there's no real point. Those used to be more prevalent, more important in the meta and the strategies in the past. The overworld right now is really kicking. Helltide 2.0 is a big win, and now the current Whispers, the Witchtide, the Headhunt zones are a big win. Yeah. It's open world stuff, but I mean, I don't know how much people really see that as interacting with other players.
Right.
A stat came out a few months ago that from Blizzard themselves saying 85% of their players only play solo; they never party up. So
that's wild.
Yeah, I think leading up to release, they saw Lost Ark, and Lost Ark is an MMO with ARPG elements. Mm-hmm. And they probably want to capture more of that kind of stuff. Back from the D2 days, right? The original D2 devs developing D3 were going to make D3 an MMO. They saw MMO as the future of the ARPG. So, with D4, they wanted to kind of dip their toe there, but not go all the way. Was not received very well with a lot of players. A lot of us, ARPG guys like to just be able to do stuff by ourselves.
Right.
We don't like to have to party up. I surprisingly love the Dark Citadel.
It's
some of my favorite content in the game.
Yeah.
But only because I play with people I know, I guess.
Exactly. Not grouping up with random people or anything. And I did not get to play Dark Citadel. I didn't progress that far in Vessel of Hatred. How were the boss mechanics? Were they like crazy in depth, like something World of Warcraft or a Lost Ark end boss, or were they more manageable just for popping in there, playing it casually?
So I've not played World of Warcraft. I don't have good points of comparison. I think it's manageable. I mean, we figured it out like on our first or second go. I do see people like going in and being confused. But I definitely think it's manageable. Like you could figure it out. You know, you only need two people to like two people can carry the whole thing.
Right.
It helps with more people, but like ultimately two people who have really powerful builds and know what they're doing could carry the whole Citadel.
Ah, okay. Makes sense. Now, you mentioned something, an awesome piece of trivia that I don't think a lot of people know. D2 devs making D3. They wanted it to be an MMO. Super cool. There's like even some still like images out there of articles outlining it. Very cool stuff. Now, personally, I think that would actually be kind of awesome. A World of Diablo sounds pretty cool to me. The Diablo universe, I mean, mostly through your videos, and then I've read one of the Diablo books. I think it's pretty metal. I really like it. Okay. I'm curious though, from your perspective, of all like the different fantasy universes out there, also being a dungeon master, which is your favorite? Diablo, you know, Warcraft. It sounds like you haven't played WoW, so maybe you don't like WoW. I'm also someone who hasn't played WoW. It's so nice to meet you right here. Like so many people are not like me and haven't played WoW.
Yeah, we're vibing here. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So which universe do you like most and why? I'm curious.
Specifically fantasy or including like sci-fi?
Ooh, oh, if you got a sci-fi one that you like better, go for it, man.
Okay. I just want to see what I should open my mind to. But yeah, so while it. I didn't really get into WoW, I actually loved the original Warcraft, Warcraft 2, Warcraft 3 in particular. So I enjoyed the Warcraft universe and the lore and stuff. So like my only interest that remains in WoW is sometimes I like check in on what the lore is and I'll ask people what's the story now. Yeah. And I like that they're still talking about characters from 20 years ago, because apparently that's when, you know, they made all their best characters and no one cares about the new ones or something. I don't know. Oh, gosh. I loved StarCraft. I mean, possible StarCraft was my favorite universe. I loved the characters and the setting and the factions and the story. And man, like the day that StarCraft 2 was announced was at the time the happiest day of my life. I was just such a big StarCraft 1 fan. I also really like StarCraft 2, but I think it's something that people generally don't know about me because I never talk about StarCraft really. But
are you a big RTS fan?
I was, I guess, in the 90s.
So you missed the like Age hype and everything? You never played like maybe Age of Empires, Age of Mythology, all those games?
I got into it a bit. Not as much as like StarCraft was my main one, but I did a little bit of Command and Conquer, a little bit of Age of Empires 2 was the big one. Right. I don't think I ever played Age of Mythology, but like, you know, Total Annihilation, you know, some of the more obscure ones as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's mostly I played whatever my dad bought. Like I was a kid, so.
Right.
And he seemed to buy a lot of strategy games. I think the strategy games are just big in the 90s.
Yeah, the Age, they all took off. I was Age of Mythology. I've got the poster right there. Age of Mythology Retold, plug that. That's a very fun game. Definitely try it out. An actually good remaster. Very proud of that. Actually, great. One more thing about ARPGs, Riker. The D2R, so the Diablo 2 remaster, I have not played Diablo 2 since I was about 12 years old. All right, and everybody tells me this, you got to play it. It's such a good ARPG. You should experience it as an adult. I remember it being super hard, and I remember having a wonderful time. However, do you think going back now, with no real nostalgia for the mechanics, the abilities, or anything else, do you think someone in the modern day could go back and really enjoy Diablo 2? Given I've played like PoE2, Last Epoch, D4, all these games. How do you think it would hold up with the modern audience, you know, like myself?
All right, so someone that has never played D2 before, but they basically have played other modern ARPGs, it's going to be rough. I love D2. It's possibly it's one of my favorite games of all time. I love it. It's going to be rough for a number of reasons. Quality of life stuff, like lack of end game. Like there were things that were just okay 20 years ago, but like the genre has evolved and a lot of that stuff just isn't in the game. I think you take away the nostalgia, it's rough. It's rough. I mean, I know that I played, you know, sometimes my old gang of D2 friends, we'd come together and we'd want to do a LAN party and we would rope in some people that didn't really play D2 back in the day. And they're just like, they weren't feeling it at all. Whereas we're all like having a great time. And they're just like, this game feels so old. And unfortunately, D2R still has the old engine running underneath everything. It's got a pretty, you know, coat of paint on it. And they did, you know, some things to enhance the experience. Like, I think they did literally the best job anyone could possibly do remastering D2. Like as a fan of D2, it's an absolute joy and pleasure, but it's still a 20-year-old game.
It is. Yeah. See, I'm so scared to try it out because I feel I have that inkling in the back of my mind that that's what I'm going to think. And then it's going to be something that, you know, I got to hide like my opinion on the Path of Exile 2 dodge roll. Like I just can't vocalize it, you know, it's because it could be dirty. It could really scar me, man. All right, Riker, I've got one more thing that I really want to talk to you about. And oh, this might take an hour to discuss. So Frosty LaRue put out this crazy video of you talking about drones. Frosty LaRue, this madman, this Diablo 4 super fan, okay, the biggest of them all, okay? All right? He had this, I think it was the most masterful thing he's ever done, honestly, man. I was crying, okay? It was, I think it was like 5 a.m. when I saw it. You know, my daughters woke up in the early or morning hours. I'm rocking her back to sleep, and she's finally asleep. I'm like, oh, you know, new Frosty video, okay. They don't usually make me laugh that hard. It'll be fine. I turn it on. I am crying as everybody's talking about ARPGs, and you're just like, and the drones, and the whole subplot was just so great. So obviously you love sci-fi. Can you talk about the drones and why they were so fascinating to you in particular?
Absolutely. I'll start by saying that I'm so happy that the PoE community has been introduced to the joy and love that is Frosty LaRue. What a treasure in our community. And I'm glad that now he's not just in the Diablo community, he is in the ARPG community. So very happy that the Frosty cinematic universe has expanded and grown. It's like Marvel and DC coming together. Thanks to Frosty here. Mm-hmm. And don't get into which one is Marvel and which one's DC. But,
no, we won't. No, it's okay.
Yeah, so as you just hit upon there, like I have an interest in sci-fi, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, this all started a couple years back. I was just trying to find, like, I have trouble falling asleep at night. Okay. So I was trying to find stuff to, like, read to help me fall asleep. And I just happened to find that, if I read, like, UFO lore, that helps me fall asleep. And, the most random thing. Oh, and it's UAP now, not UFO anymore. Unidentified aerial phenomenon is the new term, du jour. I guess they want to get away from all the UFO nutters. But, yeah, I mean, like, so like, I don't personally think there's any compelling evidence that aliens have visited us, but it was interesting from a sci-fi perspective to see, like, what are the theories and, like, what does the UAP community believe and stuff? And so I was kind of following it from that perspective while still, like, trying to find, like, okay, anytime someone posts a video of, like, something in the sky, like, I'm always looking for a prosaic explanation, like, what is it that is not aliens? Like, it's just a bat at night, right? It's just, well, that's obviously a helicopter kind of thing. But the truth that kind of kicked off this whole thing was, oh, man. How much time do you have?
Go for it, man. It's fine. I'm really curious because that's the only little bit. I couldn't, like, find the stream VOD. So I was like, this must have been a part of some crazy rant about this. This is so interesting. And I saw everybody was covering it on the news. And then, man, it just stopped. I couldn't find anything about it. So,
well, it's a cover-up, right?
Okay.
That's why the VOD was deleted as well. The Illuminati got it.
Crazy. But, crazy, man.
So just as a warning, you might get a takedown
on
your channel after this. So
that's
you're forewarned. We're getting a dangerous territory here. But
and get a strike.
So I think it came largely into the public eye last, it was December, the New Jersey drones was when mainstream media really started covering it. But the story started before then, long before then, about a year before then, or possibly longer. I became aware of it. It was December 2023, and there were these drones that were for 11 to 17 days straight, every night, like clockwork, this fleet of drones would go invade the airspace of a U.S. Air Force base. I don't know if it was Langley or Lackenheath. I forget which one it was. Okay. But it was like clockwork, and civilians were seeing these drones. The military was seeing these drones, and they were so disruptive that the military, that Air Force base, had to cease nighttime operations, and they even relocated their jets as a precautionary measure, which cost the taxpayers millions of dollars to do, by the way. So these drones were reported to have 20-foot wingspan, some of them smaller, so some of them, like, they described it as like motherships, the bigger ones, and then the smaller ones following. They'd have lights on, they'd come by, they'd just kind of do a little patrol, and then they would leave. and no one would know whose drones are these, where are they coming from? And just the 11 to 17 days, and they disappeared, and the story vanished. Until October, I believe it was, 2024, the Pentagon, or Department of Defense, in some kind of a hearing, acknowledged formally that this drone thing did happen, and that they don't know whose drones they are. They don't know where they're coming from, but they said, don't worry about them. Okay. November 2024 starts to repeat at U.S. Air Force bases in the UK. Mysterious drones with lights come fly out, go near the airspace of the Air Force bases. Civilians are seeing it. Civilians are live streaming it. And they fly out. The UK Ministry of Defense, the MOD, got involved. They sent 60 experts, including scientists, military personnel, to try to help figure out whose drones are these? Where are they coming from? We don't hear anything. The public doesn't hear anything other than a continued repetition from the US government. We don't know whose drones we don't know anything about these drones, but they're not a threat. Don't worry about them. And it was right after that that the New Jersey drone thing started to happen.
Wow.
And when it hit New Jersey, what happened was all of a sudden you got people who have never looked at the night sky before going out to look for drones, and oh my God, a drone, it's a plane. Oh my God, a drone, it's a helicopter. Oh my God, a drone, it's a bird. Oh my God, a drone, it's the moon. So this kind of overtook the story of like, there's like 99% of the reportings are false. It's people literally seeing planes. And to this day, you still have people pointing at showing footage, and you can literally hear that it's a plane. It's like a landing plane. But take away all the noise, and there still is something true there, where you look at some reports of like the Coast Guard. There's some Coast Guard that reported their boat was followed by a fleet of drones keeping pace with them at 80 knots. These are not Costco drones. These are not hobbyist civilians. Police in helicopters chasing down a drone. A police sergeant said that he had someone in the sky chasing one of these drones. As he got close to the drone's lights went off. It went dark. That's not allowed by FAA regulations. Now, actually, we just got a resolution to the story this week where the new government of the U.S. has said that the drones were FAA approved for research. So that's
research. What the dude? Oh my God. That's terrifying. What are they researching? They're just flying. Oh my God.
Yeah. So, I mean, the UAP community, like, they think that these are alien drones, that either they're like, you know, whatever. There's all kinds of theories. I think it not being aliens is a scarier thing because is this an enemy nation? Is this terrorist activity? Like, why is our airspace so vulnerable? Why can we not track? You're telling me that the U.S. government can't track these drones to where they're coming from? Like, I don't believe that. But like, why aren't you being honest with us? That's the stuff that made me really like ruminate on this.
Yeah, I think that's the terrifying. I'm totally with you. It's scarier because that's also the more realistic explanation, right? That it's someone from afar being able to go over a U.S. airbase and just fly, and they move operations instead of dealing. Oh my God, dude, that's scary. The whole drone situation is terrifying me. I've been listening to a few people talking about like the individuals that people want to recruit into militaries across the world aren't good soldiers anymore. They're good people who can fly drones. Like, they want those individuals to be recruited because that is going to be the future. Like, the people who are pros at controlling these things, you know, from some remote location, and those are going to be the absolute goats of the future, which is like, oh, is that what we're thinking about now? Oh no, please. No, no, no. This is terrifying. And then today I saw, you know, Ring doorbell, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I saw a Ring home patrol drone that just flies around your house.
Oh my God.
At all hours of the night. And while you're gone, it's just a drone that goes around in circles and it patrols your home. Oh my God, dude. I don't know. It's too much. It's too much. Please don't let it happen.
No, I mean, like what you said is right. It's the future of warfare, right? Like, drones are cheap. And I think that my favorite theory, or the one that gives me the most peace of mind and kind of makes sense, because you know, people are like, oh, there's spy drones from, you know, a foreign nation. I'm like, if they're spy drones, why would they have lights on? The theory that makes the most sense to me is that this is a red team where it's like, okay, I'm going to give you, you know, $50 million of budget. You are a black ops unit. You are going to act as an enemy of our nation, and you are going to try to attack us via this specific vector to see how vulnerable we are to this. Because that would explain why no one knows anything, why they have their FAA regulation lights on, because they're not actually trying to hurt anyone, but just point out, this is how vulnerable we are to drone attack.
Ooh, that's a pretty plausible theory. That's interesting. Oh my. Well, I hope we're able to fix that up, because that's terrifying. An entire like army of drones can just fly overhead in the UK, in the US, really anywhere. I mean, wow, that is a good origin. I had no idea about any of that, man. So thank you so much. I'm sure the chat is also like, this is some good stuff. This is awesome. To wrap it all up, man, I know we said it'd be right around an hour. We'll end with something ARPG related. All right. Future of ARPGs, you know, D4 tried with, you know, MMO elements. Path of Exile 2 has really leaned into boss fights and having these highly telegraphed moves. What do you think is that next elevation level for ARPGs? Some feature that they could steal from another game, another just, you know, something that maybe existed in the past that no longer is present, just something that you think would really resonate with players of ARPGs today, you know, us hardcore wild people that we are.
That's tough. Ooh.
This is the hardest question. It's why I leave it for the end, you know? We can let it ruminate.
I'll think on that one. Because if it was like to open up the ARPG to a wider audience, I would say that the one weakness we've had is we haven't had good PvP since like D2 low-level dueling. Like a real proper PvP. Actually, I really like the PoE's April Fool's joke. Battle Royale. I thought that was actually really done. Yeah. But like, I think, so within our community, because we've been starved of any good PvP, we largely aren't PvP players. But I think a solid PvP in an ARPG would open up, you know, to a lot of like League of Legends and MOBA players, for instance. But what resonates with us? It's hard because like I feel like GGG kind of does all the things that like they just know the genre so well and the kind of veteran players so well. So I love that they're always willing to do these crazy league ideas. Even though sometimes, you know, they don't work, I love that they have the courage to just go balls to the wall with these crazy ideas. And when they do work, like, they're glorious. So what other than that?
I like that sort of innovation in the space. I really hope like Last Epoch kind of takes that vibe too, where they try some wild stuff with their expansions. You know, obviously it's going to be about a year since their first big season when it comes out in April. I'm really hoping there's some crazy stuff in that expansion because I know they've been cooking. It's not like they've been doing nothing this past year. They have been really trying to pack everything and put it into the perfect package. And now the new Path of Exile stuff might release at the same time. And I'm like, oh no. EHG.
Please, GGG, have mercy.
I know. Come on. Right?
Yeah, no, those guys do great work. Yeah. Like they've come up with some genius solutions to things. And I think that's the thing with innovation is like, you don't know it until you see it. And like, you know, I love their solution to trade, for instance. Like that was it. That was it. And I want to see that in every game now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that would be awesome in PoE too. Some version of that, you know, GGGified, but with that base. I mean, even the SSF in that game with the Circle of Fortune.
Yeah.
I mean, what an interesting concept. And I'd love to see something like that if you couldn't migrate from SSF to trade in Path of Exile 2. That would just be my playground, probably, for the foreseeable future, right?
Absolutely. But I mean, at the end of the day, like, I just think right now, as ARPG fans, we are spoiled. We have so many games to choose from, whereas like 15 years ago, it was Deadsville. So it's just a great time to be a fan, you know.
Agreed.
Even those of us that want like that one game to sustain us forever, we can rotate through these different games. You know, when the Last Epoch you know, cycle comes out, we rotate to that. And as long as maybe some informal truce can happen between the devs and they kind of stagger their releases, we can go from one to the other.
Please, I hope that happens. I hope GGG, EHG, and Blizzard, they all just get in a room. They're like, okay, guys, we're going to do this. Come on. We're just going to chill. All right. And then, okay, Riker, I have to ask you about this because this is how I was introduced to your channel. Wolson. I know. Dirty, dirty name. That was the first video of yours I saw. I think it was a Wolson review or something way back when. They have a new game coming out. It's like Pantheon or something. I think it's supposed to be a PvP isometric game, dude. You gonna check it out?
Oh, oh God. I have a sour relationship with Wolson, man.
I know.
I can't say I'm too enthused to check it out. I mean, if other people check it out and say it's good, then you know maybe I'll check it out. But like,
all right. I got into the alpha. I'll let you know, okay?
Oh, all right. All right. I mean, hey, you know, if I
didn't play Wolson.
Was just frustrated. You didn't play at all?
Okay. No, I just watched your content.
Okay. It's a point of frustration for me because there's just the lost potential and like seeing the cycle of development where like things are good and then like, oh no, what happened? And like the build that I played pre-release, like things were mostly okay. And what we've seen in their cycle post-release is like they whenever they do some kind of update, they just break everything. And then they take like 3 months to fix everything. And it's like, okay, the game's in a good state. And then they release another update and it breaks everything again. And the same thing happens. So that's exactly what happened at launch. It was like right before launch, things were in a pretty good state. They launch and then the launch version of the game broke things. And then by the time it was fixed, everyone was gone. I had friends that actually got into Wolson in the summer. It was like 3 months post-launch and like, this game's amazing. Like, why is everyone complaining? I'm like, because they fixed everything now.
Yeah.
But then they released a patch and they broke everything again. And it's
like the plight of inexperienced devs. That must be it. You know, it's like they got this big success. They're doing live service, which if you're inexperienced and you have such a huge game with a lot of moving parts, I'm sure it's rough as all hell. Like I can't even, my company runs a few websites and we, you know, lead gen and everything. Dude, the number of things that can just break in a release on a basic website. So it really boggles my mind. Right, making games is really hard. So, you know, even though people give GGG, Blizzard, EHG, all these different companies like crap, I mean, it is a miracle that games even function, honestly. All the games that we play, I have to say it, it's crazy. I massive respect to the devs and all the people involved in working on them. So, yeah, man, this has been a great chat. Do you have anything else you wanted to say about PoE 2 or any other topics we discussed?
I look forward to what more is to come, and especially I can't wait to play the full Huntress when that gets in the game.
Ooh, were you a big Jabazon
gameplay, man? Yeah, just no game has satisfied that Jabazon fantasy since D2.
Ooh, okay, well hopefully it's coming in that big 0.2 patch that's arriving, unknown, we'll see how long. Yeah, we'll see. It'd be great.
Let them cook. Yeah.
Well, man, it has been awesome speaking with you. Thanks so much for hopping on the pod. I really appreciate it, Riker.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate you.
All right. Thanks. Have a great night, man. Bye.
Have a good one. Bye.